In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Here on I Spy Radio, we talk a lot about the ongoing effort to have the federal government turn over ownership of public lands they hold to the states. For states east of the Rockies, they've already done this. There's a saying that those who fail to remember history are doomed to repeat it. In the late 1800s, the federal government was giving up control of lands as new states were formed and were able to take over management of the land. And then it stopped as people on the East Coast sought to, in their mind, preserve wilderness areas. And over the ensuing decades, the effort to give ownership of the federal lands to the states ground to a halt. The battle for control over federal public lands intensified this week as Representative Ken Ivory was attacked by a far-left group called Campaign for Accuracy and accused him of fraud. Why is the battle for public lands so important? Jobs. If you don't live inside of a major city, you know that those in rural areas create wealth and jobs by getting their hands dirty. Blue-collar, good-paying, and living-wage jobs through honest hard work. Logging, mining, farming, ranching, these all create additional jobs beyond loggers, miners, farmers, and ranchers. For instance, the logging industry would be pretty much meaningless if not for millwrights, saw operators, electricians, welders, engineers, and many other skilled tradesmen. We've previously had on guests from Center for America, which has pointed out that there is a coming shortage of exactly these kinds of jobs, skilled workers. So in a moment, we'll talk with retired Brigadier General Marianne Watson about Center for America's campaign to connect small business owners with members of the National Guard and veterans. American Jobs for America's Heroes. It's like your very own HR department. Here on iSpy Radio, we don't like it when our friends come under attack. We especially don't like it when the attackers are well-funded, hypocritical leftist organizations. Such is the case with Campaign for Accountability, which filed allegations, and that's all they are at this point, allegations, against Ken Ivory and his nonprofit organization, American Lands Council, which is leading the effort to have the federal government turn ownership of public lands over to the states. We'll talk with him and with Montana State Senator Jennifer Fielder about these accusations, and we'll take a little peek at the far-left group doing the accusing. Stay tuned for that. I'd like to welcome Brigadier General Marianne Watson with the Center for America, which is a fantastic organization. We've had them on in the past. Among some of their projects is exposing the coming massive shortage of skilled workers here in America. Those are the blue-collar jobs such as plumbers, electricians, welders, and so forth. Until her retirement in December 2013, General Watson served as the Director of Manpower and Personnel at the National Guard. She currently works with Center for America as the Vice Chair of the American Jobs for America's Heroes campaign, which seeks to encourage employers to hire National Guard members and veterans. I should also mention that in 2008, she was deployed to Bagram, Afghanistan, where she served with distinction. General, it is an honor to speak with you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor for me to be on the show.
So let's talk a little bit about this campaign that you're working on, American Jobs for America's Heroes. Do you find that employers are reluctant to hire those currently serving the National Guard because of that 2 weeks per year service requirements?
No, actually we don't. What we find is that many civilian employers, particularly those who are small employers, which is what the campaign is focused on, is that they are uneducated or unknowing about military training and experience. And when they're trying to hire someone, they either have small HR departments or it's an additional duty. So they're looking for that first person who qualifies to fill their vacancies. And based on the translation of military training experience to civilian skills, so many times they just hire the first person who's qualified and don't understand, you know, the culture gap between the two cultures.
Right, because their focus is getting that job filled as absolutely fast as possible. And like you say, a lot of small businesses don't have HR departments. In terms of the National Guardsmen themselves, what's the unemployment situation for our military men and women in the National Guard? Would you say it's higher or lower than that of the general population?
It's slightly higher than the general population, but it varies from state to state. So on average, it's a little bit higher. but there are some states that are that have their National Guard unemployment rate down to about 4%, but there are some that are unfortunately still in the double digits. And so the real situation is that there's about, total number of veterans today is about 575,000. That includes all veterans, not just the National Guard. And over the next 5 years, the military department, based on budget constraints, is going to be downsizing and to include just basic attrition, you know, traditional attrition for each year. And so we're looking at another, again, about 250,000 more veterans leaving the service for each year for the next 5 years. So the population is significant, and they're returning to our home communities in every zip code across the country, and it's these small businesses that are able to address the issue, if you will, of providing meaningful career jobs within the local community that can reach out to those veterans. So Center for America, American Jobs for America's Heroes, is really focused on educating those small businesses so that they can provide that career opportunity.
Okay, great. Let's go ahead and take our break just a little bit early here. Coming back, we'll talk a little bit more about this program that Center for America is involved in. Everyone stay with us, and we'll have some information for you, too, if you are an employer, on how you can get involved in this. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to retired Brigadier General Marianne Watson. She was the Director of Manpower and Personnel while serving in the National Guard, and she currently serves as the Vice Chair of the American Jobs for America's Heroes Project, which seeks to encourage employers to hire National Guard members and veterans. Their website, if you'd like to go visit that, is centerforamerica.org. That's O-R-G at the end there. And, of course, we'll make sure that we link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And so, General, how did this campaign get started, and who are some of the organizations that are also involved in supporting this?
Yes, the campaign got started about 2011, and it was it started by the Army National Guard addressing the Center for America as an organization to help hire veterans to get veterans jobs. And Center for America is a nonprofit, and so the sponsor for the campaign is Phillips 66, and they also partnered with a nonprofit organization, Corporate America Supports You, and Military Spouse Career Corporate Network. In addition to these nonprofits getting together, and again, the sponsor, Phillips 66, they partner with the National Guard in each of the 54 states, territories, and the District of Columbia. Each state has a National Guard employment network team. They vary from about 2 people to anywhere to 6 to 8. And this network, if you will, is to create a no-wrong door so that when a veteran or a service member, someone currently serving the National Guard or Reserves, enters this network, whether that be with an employment counselor or one of the nonprofits, that they will get the help they need in order to get, again, meaningful career jobs.
Okay.
And so this network is in order to, again, the key here is meaningful career jobs. And so these small businesses, we also created a guide recently for small businesses. It's a step-by-step process in order for them to understand the military culture, to understand military occupational specialties and what training and experience means and as it correlates to civilian job hiring, so that they can then prepare these recruiters within their small companies, some, again, without any human resource resources to get these veterans hired. And so this small business guide is critical, we believe, to that success, particularly as it deals with the issue of underemployment. So many National Guard, Reserve, and veterans come off active duty because they don't know how to write resumes that equate to civilian occupations, and the employers don't understand military training and experience. They kind of cross, you know, talk past each other, and so many of these veterans are hired in entry-level jobs, and their training and experience is not recognized when being hired. So that's the critical piece of these guides being developed and put on, again, the www.centerforamerica.org website.
So in terms of the specialties that the National Guardsmen have, are there certain industries that they would be especially suited for?
There are so many correlations. There's medical, there's logistics, there's human resource, there's IT. So there are so many direct correlations, but I think another thing that employers have to realize is that all veterans come with so many skill sets.
Sure.
And their, accelerated training, learning curve, their leadership and training and experience. So even the folks that are probably, 22, 23 years old has already received a tremendous amount of leadership training within the military, and also diversity and inclusion and so many other attributes, particularly the value system of loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. And so the teamwork and the team effort that's inherent in the military is so much appealing to the civilian sector as well.
And in your work with trying to get National Guard's people into the workforce, what would you say is probably the biggest misconception that a lot of employers would have about hiring a military or former military?
I think the biggest misperception is the baggage, if you will, that a veteran may bring from deployment, and that is certainly not the case. While I also deployed in 2008, I can attest to the fact that military members may have issues with reintegration, but over a short period of time, they're fully integrated back, with their family in society, particularly those in the Guard and Reserve, and are such a great benefit for all the civilian employers in their local community. So it's a huge misperception.
Okay. And then just real quick, so an employer wants to get in contact with your organization, is the best way to just head to your website, centerforamerica.org?
Absolutely. So we encourage all businesses, particularly the small business community hires about 80 to 81% of all new hires each month in this country. So they are providing such a significant number of jobs for veterans and service members. I encourage everyone to visit www.centerforamerica.org to find out more information. And if you're an employer, it takes five minutes to register and start posting jobs, and this is free to everyone who gets onto this website. So we really appreciate it, and we hope you get started.
All right, great. General, thank you so much for your time today. We really support the military and anything we can do to help connect the brave men and women of our armed forces with employers to get them jobs in the private sector. We are definitely all for that. Coming up next, Representative Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council, who has been accused by a far-left organization of fraud. We'll let him answer their accusations, and we'll also take a little peek at the accusers. Stay with us. I'd like to welcome now Representative Ken Ivory, the president of the American Lands Council, which came under fire this week by a far-left organization. And also joining us on the phone is Montana State Senator Jennifer Fielder, who was the chair of Montana's study on federal land management back in 2013 to 2014, and is currently the vice chair of the Montana Republican Party. Welcome to you both.
Hey, Mark. Thanks. Nice to be on.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are both back in Washington, D.C., in the belly of the beast, so to speak. But, of course, the big news this week is that Campaign for Accountability has accused you, Ken, of fraud. They filed letters of complaint with three attorneys general in Montana, Utah, and Arizona. So let's look at what they accuse you of, and then later we'll look at the issues, in other words, why they think it's fraud, and then take a little peek at the group that's accusing you. It seems to me there are three main complaints they have. First, that the federal government would never transfer ownership of federal lands to the states, and that any attempts to do so would be unconstitutional. Secondly, that you knowingly made false statements to convince county commissioners or local officials to donate to your nonprofit. And third, that the nonprofit exists primarily to enrich yourself and your wife. So let's let you respond to each of those. That first one, that the federal government would never transfer ownership of federal lands to the states, and that doing so would be unconstitutional. Ken, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's two small problems with that. Number one, it's already been done before.
Oops.
Illinois was 90% federally controlled for decades. Missouri, Arkansas, Alabama, Louisiana, that great western state of Florida, 90% federally controlled, and they banded together, rallied, and compelled the federal government to transfer their land. Hawaii in 1959. Rallied politically, the federal government, right in the Enabling Act, transferred all the public lands directly to the state of Hawaii, and so it's already been done before. As far as the constitutionality, this is how radical this is, Mark. You ready for this? Oregon has the same statehood terms for the disposition and transfer of the public lands as Illinois and Iowa and Missouri. And so do all the other states. All the states west of the Rocky Mountains have the same statehood terms as the states east of the Rocky Mountains. And we're simply advocating that the federal government honor the very same statehood promise. That sounds pretty reasonable, don't you think?
I would think so. And like you say, it's been done before. And it just reminds me that those who fail to remember history are doomed to file false accusations.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, in their so-called allegations, they conveniently ignore all those stubborn facts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and also they really come at it, you know, when you look at their letter, and we'll make sure that that's available up on iSpyRadio.com. We'll have a copy of what they have sent off to the attorneys general. When you read through that, they're pretty convinced that they already know what the Supreme Court would rule, regardless of whatever arguments that you would make. And Jennifer, maybe you can weigh in on this.
Well, they don't want it to go to court. Obviously, they don't want it talked about at all because I think they know we're right. And so that's why they're resorting to all these desperate tactics to try to smear and fear. And, you know, first they started out saying it's not possible and trying to write it off as a fringe idea. And now that the idea has really gained a lot of traction and makes a lot of sense to most of the people that hear it out, they're just resorting to these other tactics to try to suppress the conversation and try to stop people from talking about it.
Well, and in Montana, like I mentioned when I introduced you, that you were a part of the study on the federal land management, and you guys actually examined this issue, correct? So why don't you walk us through some of what you guys discussed there and whether or not this would be possible?
Well, the study of federal land management in Montana was geared towards identifying all the problems that are going on the federal lands in our state and then looking at possible solutions. And this idea of the transfer of federal public lands to the states came up as one of the solutions, but there were the same kind of resistance was there that we're seeing now, but just at a little bit different level, and it was suppression of speech. There were people on the committee, the legislative committee, that said, we will not talk about this, and if you bring it up, we're walking out of the meeting.
Wow.
So from day one, they did not want to allow this conversation to happen, and it's happening, and they don't like it, so they're just trying everything they can to stop it.
And that's something that I have noticed in looking at their accusation and some of the other write-ups that I've seen on this, too, is that it is amazing how much people that are in Washington and some of these leftist groups are so desperate to hang on to control.
Yeah, that really is it, Mark. This is really a sign of how much success that we're having, that a dark money D.C. big-time political hit group would come after a state representative moving legislation that was passed by supermajorities, bipartisan support in Utah. Legislation has been introduced all over the western states. Legislation has been passed in several states, eastern states, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, resolutions of support, Republican National Committee, the American Farm Bureau, the National Association of Counties, for example, resolutions of support, American Legislative Exchange Council, resolutions of support. There's all sorts of organizations around the nation that have looked at this and said, this is really the only solution big enough to halt an environmental crisis that you see in Oregon every single day. Burning 5 million acres a year, and there are fringe groups like this that call that environmentalism. Burning millions of animals, and there are fringe groups like this that call that environmentalism. Polluting the air, destroying the watershed, and fringe groups like this call that environmentalism and want to stifle the debate. Well, we know better. We know better. Tending the garden is not only health, but it's also productivity to fund education, health and human services, public safety. And these groups simply want to stifle that in the epitome of condescension, purporting with dark money, with no accountability, that they know better how to deal with the land.
And it's so funny because that's what they accuse you of, is having all this dark money, which is kind of ironic. But anyway, we'll come back to them. We're up against a break here, so we'll have to come back to those other two points. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more on the issue of transfer of public lands with Representative Ken Ivory and with Montana State Senator Jennifer Fielder. And then coming up, we're going to be taking a little look to see how accountable Campaign for Accountability is. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today about the accusations by the Campaign for Accountability that has filed these complaints with attorneys generals in three states, Montana, Utah, and Arizona, against our guest, Representative Ken Ivory. He's been on our show a number of times. He's the president of American Lands Council, and joining us today is also Montana State Senator Jennifer Fielder. She was the chair of Montana's study on federal land management and has also done some work with the American Lands Council to move this issue forward. Thank you both for joining us. And so we were talking about some of the accusations. The second one was that you had knowingly made false statements to convince county commissioners or local officials to donate to your nonprofit because, you know, apparently you knew in advance that this was all completely unconstitutional, Ken. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, let's see. We knew in advance that the Federalist Society, an organization of 40,000 lawyers, scholars, and professors, did a full legal analysis, about 65 pages, hundreds of footnotes. We knew in advance that the BYU Law Review put out a law review article that was about 85 pages and hundreds of footnotes, saying that, get this, Mark, the federal government has a duty to honor the same statehood promises to states west of the Rockies that it kept east of the Rockies. We knew in advance that the statehood promises are the same for states east of the Rockies as they are west of the Rockies. We knew in advance that the federal government's already done this with states east of the Rockies. And this organization conveniently ignored all those facts.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And the third and final accusation against you is that the nonprofit exists primarily to enrich yourself and your wife. So Ken, I have to say, looking at your financial statements, I have to say that I wish every lawyer only made $95,000 a year.
Yeah, I used to have a really nice, flourishing law practice.
It would be $47 bucks an hour. I think most people could afford that.
You know what's interesting, Mark, is they try to say this is my organization and the enriching myself and all the rest. The counties formed the American Lands Council. And they govern the American Lands Council, and they hired me to be the voice and the president of the organization. What's really amazing, Mark, is this organization is a subsidiary creation of something called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. It's connected.
Yes.
They're an offshoot from that.
Yeah. And we will come back to them, actually. So, yeah, we have looked at them. They've got two former members of CREW with them. So, yeah, we'll come back to that. But in terms of their accusation that this primarily exists to enrich you, I did look at the 990s that you had out there. And yes, your salary from this is a significant portion of the proceeds. So how do you explain that to our audience?
Well, because it's a startup organization that right in the documents in 2013, the organization had raised about, $250,000 or something. You know, to the point that we have the same type of funding that these organizations making the allegations have,
Yeah. Well,
then my salary will be about 1% of the funding of the organization. These organizations are supported by billionaires and organizations with virtually unlimited funds to try to use these kind of bullying tactics because they want to stifle the debate. And so they use these kinds of percentages and things. When we get to the point that we've raised the kind of money and that they have, then, like I said, my salary would be about 1%. But regardless of the percentage, Mark, I understand that in the United States of America, we still believe that people deserve an honest day's pay for an honest day's work. And, we've been out working on this pretty diligently for the last couple of years to the point that we've got Western states introducing legislation all over the Western states, all over the nation, and that's making these folks really nervous, and so they're coming out to try to stifle the debate. This is really a sign of the success that we're having, that it's making some people very nervous that they see their control slipping away, which is, controlling land is controlling people.
Yeah, exactly right. And like I said, we will come back. I did actually write them a letter to find out what their salaries were, and we'll cover that in the next segment. But let's look at some of the issues here, because they have on their website the top five reasons why Ken Ivory is flat wrong on this issue and why we need to stand up and protect federal land for future generations. And the first one we've already addressed, that's your proposed legislation is unconstitutional. The second one, though, is that Ivory is backed by the American Legislative Exchange Council. Ken, that's just so horrifying that Alec would would name you, and I see here they say that you were named State Legislator of the Year by Alec in 2014. First of all, I had missed that somehow, so congratulations on that. Alec is a great group.
Yeah, so here's what Alec stands for. Their mission is limited government, free markets, and federalism. So what that means is liberty matters, jobs matter, and balance in government matters. And that's what these people are trying to say is somehow evil. Mark, this tells you a lot about who these people are that are making these allegations.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jennifer, how do you sit next to somebody that was the State Legislator of the Year as nominated by Alec, of all places?
Well, he's an amazing talent. He's got the skill, he's got the knowledge, he's got the passion for the issue, and I don't know anybody that could have moved it further than he has. You know, obviously, it's not a 9-to-5 job. This guy's traveling all over the place. He's working all the time. He's just tireless, and he's found an idea that people can relate to and people think is a good idea. So all the credit goes to Ken and the people that have been willing to listen to him and the folks that from these counties that went out and found him and hired him to bring this message out. I mean, it's just been tremendous to see the growth in the interest in this issue since he's been out there talking about it to folks. And I mean, he does a complete presentation that gives all the background on this, the historical background, legal background, the economic issues, the environmental issues. It's a really comprehensive course that he basically teaches when he goes out and presents on this. And everywhere I've seen him do it and everywhere I've presented on the issue, we've seen just tremendous support. The room generally stands up and gives a standing ovation because they're so excited about this idea. And it's just kind of a new way of thinking about doing things the way our founders envisioned and something we've track of over time in our country.
Absolutely. And speaking of presentations, Ken will be joining us down in Cottage Grove for the Rally Around the American Flag event that's on June 20th. So if you'd like to head to iSpyRadio.com, you can find out details about that. Everyone stay with us. We're going to have more with these two, Ken Ivory and Jennifer Fielder, coming up in the next segment where we'll be looking a little bit more at Campaign for Accountability and see how accountable they are. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Representative Ken Ivory, the president of the American Lands Council that has come under fire by the Campaign for Accountability. And we'll be looking at them with a little bit of a microscope here in just a little bit. But also joining us today is Montana State Senator Jennifer Fielder. She was the chair of Montana's study on federal land management. And I want to go back to what we were talking about in the last segment there. They've got these five reasons why this will never happen. The five reasons, the top five reasons why Ken Ivory is flat wrong on the issue. So number three here, we've already covered that one as well, that you're using this as your for your own enrichment. But number four here is kind of an interesting one. It says land transfer will not result in an economic boon for the states. In fact, according to economic analysis, Utah would have to substantially increase energy production to cover the cost of managing the lands and to protect the revenue stream counties currently enjoy from federal royalties. In other words, welfare payments from the federal government in order to not use your land. So, Jennifer, why don't you take that question there? Is this good or bad for states?
Well, I think it would be an excellent boon to our economy if we managed the public lands better. The lands have resources on them. And when you mismanage those resources, it's far more expensive to take care of the land than if you would take care of it properly to begin with, just like when you take care of anything you own. If you let it get run down, it's going to be more expensive to fix and repair it. That's what's been going on. The states actually do manage millions of acres of public lands now. The western states do. In Montana, we have over 5 million acres of public land, and those are lands that were transferred to the state by the federal government at statehood. And we manage those lands in a way that produces revenues that fund our school system, our university system, our school for the deaf and blind, our veterans home, our Capitol campus. Those lands are managed in a way that provides sustainable funding for very important state institutions, and they have for over 125 years. So for this other organization to come out and say that it would be a liability to the state for us to manage our own lands and resources is just completely opposite from the facts that are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just doesn't make any logical sense that you could leave it sitting there and do nothing with it and somehow that's going to generate income. So, Ken, their fifth point here is that people in the West...
Let me just jump in on that one a little bit, too. So the Property Environmental Research Center, just in March of this year, put out a report that said for every dollar the federal government spends managing public lands, they lose 27 cents. For every dollar the states spend managing public lands, and as Jennifer mentioned, states already manage millions of acres of public lands, they generate on average a positive $14.51.
Yeah. Good point. So their fifth point here is that people in the West trust the federal government to administer the lands. And I promised my producer I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to anyway. So hold on one second here. I'm sorry. Anybody that lives in Oregon knows that is absolutely absurd, unless you live in downtown Portland and you never actually leave the city or the coffee shops.
You know, Mark, my gut reaction is to laugh like you did. I had a call from local newspaper while we were here in D.C., and she advised me that one of our counties next week is intending to declare a state of economic emergency.
Yeah.
In their county. We had interviews with our counties recently. There's actually videos on the American Lands Council website. If you go to AmericanLandsCouncil.org and in the search bar type in personal stories, and you'll see these county commissioners, and one after another said, our number one export in our counties is our children.
Hmm.
The opportunities are gone because death by 1,000 federal cuts are strangling and killing the communities, deteriorating the health of the communities, restricting access, depressing the economic viability. And it really is just sad.
It is sad. And we certainly see that here in Oregon, too. Josephine County can't field a full complement of sheriffs and law enforcement. We see it in other counties as well. There was one, a couple of them actually, real close to bankruptcy simply because they've got all of these natural resources that they could be using to generate income, and it's just sitting there going to waste. So let's take a look now at this organization, Campaign for Accountability. And I had sent them a letter because, the main thrust of some of their interviews in the press was that you're making all of this money. And so I had sent them a letter, and I'll just read some excerpts of this. I wonder if you would like to offer any additional comments beyond what has so far been reported via links you posted on your website. Has Representative Ivory or his representatives contacted you regarding this matter? Did you speak or otherwise contact Representative Ivory directly about his organization before filing your request for investigations? If so, could you give us some insight into those conversations? I will say that as of this moment, this has been now after several days of trying to get a contact from them, zero response. So what's your response? Did they ever contact you at all about this? Did they say, hey, what exactly are you guys trying to do?
No, they never contacted me. They never contacted any of the counties they're supposedly bringing this claim on behalf of. Their claim really boils down to, Mark, that the counties aren't smart enough to form their own organization and decide how to fund their own organization to collectivize their strength to protect the health, safety, and welfare of their counties. Mark, I gotta believe that this organization wouldn't know how to pronounce the word Tooele for Tooele County, wouldn't be able to find Tooele County, Utah on a map. And yet, this is the height of Washington hypocrisy to say that this dark money D.C. organization named Campaign for Accountability is standing to protect the counties from themselves. I'll tell you, the counties are furious. They're passing resolutions doubling their support for American Lands Council.
That's awesome.
Passing resolutions reaffirming their support for the transfer of public lands. This has actually been a boon to our support because it's strengthening the resolve.
And that's awesome that they are doing that. We're getting up close to a break here, but real quick before we go there, I just want to say that they were accusing you of enriching yourself. I asked them to avoid the appearance of falling into one of the shadowy organizations that they accuse other people of doing, whether they could state for the record what their compensation was as executive director. You want to take a guess of what she was making when she was with Crew?
Well, I think in something that I saw that this one director made more in 1 year than our entire organization raised.
Yeah, well, that's the former director for CREW, Ann Weissman, who's the chief. She was the chief legal counsel for CREW, and then now she is the executive director for this one. But so we're having to guess what she is making right now because she won't reveal it. But as under CREW, she worked at $183,000 plus benefits, so roughly $200,000, making double. So if you're enriching yourself, that kind of says something about her as well. So everyone stay with us. We're going to have more on them coming up. We'll be also talking about some of the issues that are out there in terms of where this all heads from here. So stay with us. And welcome back. This is the final segment now on iSpy Radio Show. We have been talking about the smear campaign by the Campaign for Accountability against the American Lands Council. And joining us today is Representative Ken Ivory. He's their president, and also Montana State Senator Jennifer Fieldler. And you know, to come back to that organization a little bit, I forgot to mention actually that what they seem to be is an offshoot of Citizens for Responsibility, something in Washington. And so anyway, that's what the CREW stands for, and they've got at least two board members off of there. It looks like they may have some other ones joining them shortly. But, you know, it's really interesting when you look at CREW's financial, because this is one that certainly was financed by George Soros. I did see one article that accused Campaign for Accountability also being funded by Soros. I have not personally seen anything that would necessarily connect that, but they probably are getting some money, I would suspect. From CREW as well. But it's really interesting when you look at their finances. From 2010 to 2013, they averaged about $2.6 million in revenue, out of which their salaries, all of it, well, when you add up all of the salaries, compensation of officers, other salaries and wages, benefits, non-employee wages, that's like their fee for services, so they're paying consultants and all this sort of stuff. When you add all that up, it amounted to $2.4 million pretty much across the board. Well, about 2.3, I guess, for those 3 years that CREW's 990s were available. And so that amounts to 87% of what they were taking in. Ken, when I ran your numbers, you want to know what your percentage was?
Yeah, I have no idea.
76%.
Is that right?
So this group accusing you of malfeasance, of financial malfeasance, of lying to people about what it is that you're trying to do simply to enrich yourself, they're actually running higher salaries as part of their program administration than what you are. What's your take on that?
Well, fascinating, right? You know, we're out on the ground. People invite us to come speak and teach. We're out educating. And, you know, it really is amazing that it's just more of the type of DC mindset where money's no object. We're going to bludgeon and engage in kind of political stunts and tactics. And that's what these people are doing, right? This is a political stunt because we're over the target, right? When you're over the target, you can expect to take flak. As we're out here in D.C. and we talk about this group, this Citizens for Responsibility Ethics in Washington, and this new hit group that formed a month ago just to attack what we're doing, people in D.C. know that it's a badge of honor, that it shows that we're having success and having an impact, and it really is stealing the resolve of our counties and members. You know, how dare they? How dare they come out and say, you don't know what you're doing in forming an organization, and you don't know what you're doing. You're being duped in organizing and moving to protect the health, safety, welfare of your communities. Mark, it really just displayed the height of Washington hypocrisy and the need to get back to self-governance at the local level.
Yeah, and so often when you see these leftist groups, they say one thing, but their actual intentions is quite another. You know, they say that millions of Americans' lives are negatively impacted by decisions made behind the doors of corporate boardrooms, government offices, and shadowy nonprofit groups. And so they seem to me to be a pretty shadowy nonprofit group if they're not even bothering to get back to me after 3 days and of attempts to email them. And yet they seem to not want to discuss their own salaries when they're accusing you of enriching themselves. Jennifer, do you have anything to add to that in terms of what you guys deal with there in Montana with these types of organizations?
I think this group that's on the attack is about as shadowy as they come. I mean, they've given themselves this nice name. They've self-proclaimed to be watchdogs. And if you look at who they are and you look at the resumes that they posted of themselves, they're all Democrat Party political operatives at a high level. You know, they're all Democrat operatives. You can read their resumes right on their website. And yet they proclaim to be this nonpartisan group for accountability as if they're a watchdog of everything. And they're not. They're an attack group. They're an attack dog group more than anything. And, you know, the American Lands Council operates in the light of day. They're honest people. They're good, hardworking people. Most of them are these folks that are on the board are ranchers. They're county commissioners.
Right.
And the decisions they made to join and fund the American Lands Council were done in open public meetings. The resolutions they pass of support are done in open public meetings that involve their constituents. So American Lands Council is operating in the light of day as a matter of standard procedure, and this other group won't even tell you how much they earn or where it's coming from, and yet they claim to be the champions of transparency.
Yeah, I did ask them also who their major donors are, and again, just utter silence. So surprising. All right, so let's. We've only got about 4 minutes or so here with you. In Congress right now, you guys are actually there in Washington. Congress is now seriously looking into transferring lands back to the western states. So can you give us some status updates of where they are with that process or the outlook of that?
Well, this is a big lift. It's going to take time, right? Step one is education. And so Congressman Bishop from Utah named Congressman, he's the chairman of the Natural Resources Committee, named Congressman Stewart from Utah to chair a federal land action group that has representatives from Nevada, from Arizona, from Wyoming, from Tennessee, from Pennsylvania on this federal land action group to study the history, the law, and the legislative path forward. Meanwhile, in Utah, we have appropriated millions of dollars to hire special legal counsel to begin moving forward the legal case to compel the federal government to honor the very same promise. And then, as we mentioned, there's activity moving forward in virtually all western states throughout the nation. And you know, these folks are concerned they're going to lose their stranglehold grip in Washington.
Yes.
That restricts access to the land, that diminishes the health, and depresses the productivity of our western lands.
And I think it's interesting that right on the heels of Congress really starting to take a serious look at this, now all of a sudden along comes Campaign for Accountability. And I can't imagine that that's just a mere coincidence, because like you said, they have a Campaign for Accountability. It looks like they formed about 4, maybe 5 months ago.
Yeah, I think weeks ago. I mean, maybe their website and their posts only go back to like the middle of May, as I understand it. And so, Mark, if people want to stand up for liberty and property and the right and ability to govern themselves, determine their own fate in their local communities, go to the AmericanLandsCouncil.org website. There's a petition there that says, I want better access, better health, better productivity for my public lands, federal public lands to become state public lands for multiple use, sustain yield with local planning. So AmericanLandsCouncil.org, sign the petition, share the information with your friends. Imagine Benjamin Franklin with a Facebook page, Thomas Jefferson with an email account. You know, we have the ability to communicate and spread this message in ways that they would be so envious to spread liberty. But liberty is not a spectator sport, and so it's time to get involved.
That is absolutely right. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock here. Jennifer, did you have any last thoughts that you'd like to add?
Well, I just think we're making tremendous progress in seeing our lands managed better, and obviously that's a threat to the people that do not want that to happen. The folks that will take an objective look at what the American Lands Council is all about and the benefits of transferring the federal lands to the state so they can be managed better. If folks take a good look at that, most of them are coming to our side, even the environmentalists, because they care about the land, I care about the land, and we want it taken care of better. So American Lands Council has a great idea. I'm really glad that Ken's out there leading the charge, and I think we need to give him all the help we can.
Absolutely agree. And Ken, I hope this actually turns out to be a successful fundraiser for you. Ken Ivory versus George Soros-funded group. I can't imagine people wouldn't want to get on board with that. Again, thank you both for your time. And Ken, we will be seeing you on June 20th.
Hey, I look forward to it, Mark. Thanks.
All right. Sounds great. And just a quick reminder before we go, I will be down in Grants Pass on June 24th. That's a Wednesday, speaking to the Rogue Valley Republican Women's Group about the dangers of school-based health centers. Find out more information about both of those events by heading to iSpyRadio.com and just look for the events tab at the top of the page. And check out today's show page for more information about Campaign for Accountability. Because the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.